So with lockdown easing, the search for a vaccine and medicines continuing too, it's time to make, well, some sense of it all with Professor Bertie Squires, Dean of Clinical Sciences and International Public Health here in Liverpool at the School of Tropical Medicine. Bertie, always a pleasure to have you on the programme. Thanks for coming on once again. We're 3 days into what was a significant easing of the lockdown, and there's definitely a more relaxed vibe, if you like, out on the street, but vigilance and being alert to the danger, I mean, that is still incredibly important.
Morning, Tony. Morning, everyone. You're absolutely right. I think that we definitely have seen a change in the atmosphere of the way people are circulating, I guess, outside much more. But it does remain really important that we continue to be careful about social distancing. The same things I've been talking about over the several weeks, so social distancing, hand washing, taking care, they do remain incredibly important. There's no doubt about that.
We see queues now for the drive-throughs. We see furniture store open to the weekend. And yes, there was social distancing and, you know, people were doing what they were supposed to have done. But when we start to put all of these things together, you know, there's news of the football's coming back on, it's easy to say, I think it's gone now. We think this is all over, but it certainly isn't.
No, you're absolutely right. And certainly within the medical community, it makes us uneasy to be contemplating the possibility of that much more interaction. And we're all concerned about something which you have probably heard talked about, and that is the possibility of a second spike in numbers, a second rise in the numbers of cases being admitted to hospital, and therefore a rise in the number of deaths again. So we're concerned about that and very vigilant for that. And I think we would urge people to understand that everyone understands, medical people like me as well, that getting back to some kind of normality is really, really important. But in that normality, it continues to be important to keep your distance, wear a face covering when you're out and can't keep your distance, wash your hands, and actually remain careful.
Of course, across Europe, we're seeing that they've eased, you know, a little more. Of course, I think we're maybe 2 or 3 weeks behind the likes of Spain and Italy. And I guess you watch this carefully, you and your fellow colleagues, really, are just watching closely just to see how it goes, because it doesn't necessarily follow that we will follow them in 3 weeks' time. It all depends on what happens.
Yes, you're right. We still have some of the highest numbers in Europe, and it's therefore correct that we are cautious in how we ease the lockdown. So we see these easings in Europe, and it's not just because they've decided to do that earlier. It's because they're at a different stage. They've managed to get their numbers down to a level of safety that permits them to start that easing. As I've said on previous interviews, I think one of my previous crumbs of comfort was that those European countries were opening up earlier, and we were able to see and watch carefully what happens there. So far, so good, provided the opening processes are careful and measured.
In the news yesterday, we saw there's now a trial using ibuprofen as part of a treatment for COVID patients. And this was after it was thought that the drug could do more harm than good, because in the early days, in the early weeks, it was, you know, please don't take this, you know, just take paracetamol. So there's still a lot of confusion there. How can it swing so dramatically from, oh, flipping heck, don't take that, but now, you know, this might be an option for us?
Well, I guess the underlying explanation is that we are trying to learn a lot about a completely new infection in a very short space of time. So the science knowledge moves very quickly. And if we think back to the time that you're talking about, when there were concerns about ibuprofen and the group of drugs that it belongs to, the non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, at that point, we really didn't understand a great deal about the virus. What we do know now is that, broadly speaking, there are two ways in which the virus causes damage to the body. One is the direct multiplication of the virus within the tissues. And the second is the body's immune response to the virus. And we now have a large number of trials going on, which are testing out agents which act on those two broad processes. Mm. So there are a huge number of medicines now which are being tested, which directly stop the virus from multiplying. You may have heard of one called remdesivir, which is licensed now for use in people who have severe disease. And then there are a whole other group which are aimed at reducing the exaggerated inflammation, which is damaging to the body. Mm. And those include things which change the way the blood clots and also which generally damp down the inflammation. I have to say that the ibuprofen is not in the main list of trials yet that are badged by the nation as of urgent public health importance. When we looked at those data recently, there are more than 20 agents falling into those two broad categories that I outlined. So you can see the science moves really quickly from not quite understanding to now testing a huge number of different agents.
And it's easy to forget. I mean, it seems like an age ago when we were reporting on the story of the coaches arriving at Arrow Park to go into isolation. Of course, that was March. But from March to today, the 4th of June, and what we know, it's easy to think, wow, this is really slow and not much is being done. And when we've moved to know what we know now, we've moved as organisations who've worked together, such as yours and others, we've moved at lightning pace compared to previous years and how we find out about things.
Yes, I think that's absolutely right. So we've had a mechanism, just to bring it to Merseyside, we've had a mechanism across Merseyside, which brings a collaboration between all of the NHS trusts and universities and primary care and social care that has been trying to have a unified approach to the emerging knowledge and the trials to make sure that we really prioritise those ones that are going to be of national importance, and that we use the resources we have across the city to absolutely maximum effect. So those resources include our research nurse capacity, our lab capacity, and the general approval mechanism. So we've moved fast, but it's not at the expense of being sure that the science that's going ahead isn't sensible and safe.
I've got a quick question, if I may, Bertie. This is from Ray in Abergele. Just about the 2 metre rule going down to 1 metre. Your thoughts on that? And I was thinking about this because generally, before all this, you wouldn't really get closer than a metre to anybody anyway, unless somebody's leaning over to get into a freezer in a supermarket and kind of nudges you out the way. But, you know, generally we do stay about a metre away from people before all this.
Yes, I think we do and we don't. I think sometimes we're not very conscious about how close we get to people. And I don't know whether you've been in that situation where you've met somebody outside in accordance with the rules and you've started a conversation at 2 metres away. And then as you get more into the conversation, they've come closer to you and then you've walked back a bit and then they've come a bit closer and you've walked back a bit. And so I think what happens is when you have it's worth remembering the 2 metre rule is based on the science around the distance over which infectious droplets land. And the safest distance is that 2 metres in terms of reducing down to the best risk. Clearly, the closer you are to somebody, the more likely that infectious droplets will land on you. But 2 metres is still the safest overall distance. And I think what happens with human nature is that we sort of move in just inside the 2 metre bit. And I guess we always push the boundaries, don't we?
We do. Bertie, we're out of time, but we can't let you go without your weekly crumb of comfort. What do you have for us this week?
Okay, so thank you. My crumb of comfort is really a shout out to all my colleagues at LSTM this, who we've seen a return to work for some of our laboratory staff who are working on non-COVID things. And the crumb of comfort is the excellent way in which the teams have worked out how people can return to work really safely. Screens in reception, one-way moving, social distancing, careful working out of how many people can be in which room. So that's my crumb of comfort. If we can do it, lots of other people can do return to work, but really do it safely.
Bertie, always a pleasure. Thank you very much indeed for your time this morning. There's Bertie Squire from the Liverpool School of Tropical Medicine, Dean of Clinical Sciences, and lots of other titles as well. It fills my screen. His titles fill my screen.
I know. I hope he hasn't got a badge, because it would literally take over
his placard. He'd have to have, what is it, like a sandwich board. You'd have to walk him down with a sandwich board. But listen, we really appreciate you coming on. He always just makes you feel better, doesn't he?
He's great, isn't he?
He is great. He really is. BBC